Okay. Morning, everyone. The E12 Conference Committee will come to order. It's May 13th. Great news this weekend. We have targets. We're getting closer to an agreement. We are very pleased, particularly on the payment to the ship that's going to be addressed. We're very pleased of the affirmation for all-day K for all children, regardless of zip code, and the continued strong support for early learning opportunities for those students most at risk with the goal of closing the achievement gap. A lot of other items are being addressed as well. We're going to get some updates this morning on, and actually on the testing assessment. We have a draft that I believe has been copied and will be on the table, and we'll take some testimony on that. Also on integration achievement program, reforms that Senator Torres Ray and Representative Mariani have been working on. We're going to get an update on that. And we also, as you know, the Senate is in a historic session today at noon. We're actually in caucus right now, but we'll go for at least the first part of the morning, and then we'll be in recess and give you more information. But I'm very optimistic now with targets and the direction that we're going to close this up sooner than later. So, Representative Marker.
Well, thank you so much, Senator Wiegert, and I think we can probably have this closed up by noon today before we go back. We can close everything up. But it was good news, and the good news is that the target just reinforces what our number one goal here, and that is to close the achievement gap and improve quality of life for people in the state now and into the future. And it was very, very good news that the complete shift to the school, both the property tax recognition shift and the payment shift, will be paid back. And I see sitting in the front row, we have Representative Selzer, who was our author of House File Number 1. And I know she has been tenacious in making sure that we were able to accomplish this task. And yet, she also knew we wanted investment in our students also, so we're able to do both. So that's fantastic news that we're going to be able to pay back that shift. And thank you, Representative Selzer, for your efforts there. And as you said, put dollars into areas we know that work, early childhood, all day K, and with a new assessment that we're going to hear packaged, we're on the track to really doing some great, great things out of this bill. So thank you, Senator Wiegert.
Thank you, Representative Marker. We'd also like to welcome Commissioner Casalias, and we'll be working especially close with you and your staff as we close this out. Maybe not by noon, but we'll get it sometime by midweek, let's hope. First, we're going to go to testing and assessment. Our mutual goal that all students by graduation, they're going to graduate, but they're going to be college career ready for the world's best workforce. And we have put together a number of recommendations led by Senator Dahl and Representative Breinart. And I'll ask Senator Dahl if he'd like to just highlight where we're at, and then we have proposed a resolution on this issue. I don't believe we have a fiscal note on this yet for tracking on testing, but we'll be getting that information in the near future. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. We had a lot of work since last that we met formally. There's obviously a lot of work that gets done behind the scenes with the staff and with council, and so we really poured through the really Article 2 of the bill that's before us, and line by line to make sure that we are in some agreement. So we're excited about where we're at. We feel that we do have the I's dotted, the T's crossed, and I believe we have a couple of amendments that we'll be talking about or offering up for the committee. So I don't know how you'd like to proceed, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dahl, if that could be distributed to everyone, the hard copy, and as well as for persons here, and then for viewers, or for anyone following this electronically, I would hope that could be posted very soon. So that would be the request on that. But as it's being distributed, if we could perhaps go to Representative Breinart. And thank you, Representative Breinart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Dahl. Senator Dahl correctly pointed out that quite a few people have been working hard to, as they say, cross the T's and dot the I's, and there were quite a few maybe T's that hadn't been crossed and I's dotted. And what you'll see in this A-171-4 amendment, and I could go through it in more detail, but that'll be up to the will of the committee. But quite a bit of it is technical, with cross-references to statute and clarification of what the transition structure is and what year, you know, students come under what options. There are a few things that, well, first of all, this amendment relates to the entire Article 2 except some sections that we haven't addressed yet. So there are some of the corrections are directly related to assessment. For instance, on line 111 of the amendment is a change in the House language regarding
Mr.
the standard.
Which amendment are you referring to?
171-4.
Okay. And members, I believe we have two documents, the two Article 2-1 and then the amendment -4. Okay, Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'll just be referring to the amendment in my conversation. I think the working article is meant to help you follow along in the changes that have occurred as a result of that amendment. But so on line 1.11 of the amendment, the standard setting cycle is changed from 6 to 10 years, and that came from a discussion with the department and Beth Owney, who is our standards expert. So that's an example of one element in Article 2 that doesn't directly relate to the standards or to the assessment that we are amending here. I'm not going to go through every piece of it unless you have particular questions, because I said some of it is meant to be clarifying. But what I'm going to do next is the next substantive section, I think, that might be of interest is line 2.13 of the amendment. And it's actually very modest. It's okay, and it's Senate language R15A2. And just be patient with me, because I'm not an expert at reviewing these detailed technical amendments, but I do know the subject, so I hope I can help clarify the changes we're making here. What we're attempting to do in this, it's, as I said, R15A2, that's the Senate language, and we're expanding on line 5124. Instead of students, we're inserting interested, and so interested students who, including those based on their growth and academic achievement. I'm not going to read all this. I'm going to tell you what the intent is: to expand the 11th grade option to more students than those who simply meet that attainment goal, who are already ready for college and career readiness, but to open it up to other students who want to make that reach at this point, want to see what their score is so they know how far they have to get for college and career readiness, but we still keep in place the diagnostic for those students, so it expands that 11th grade option. And that's all I'll say about that, unless there are more clarifying questions. Again, most of the rest of the amendment is clarifying or technical. The other thing of significance was the blending of the task force memberships on line 324 of the amendment. We took the House language on the structure of the task force, the Career Pathways and Technical Advisory Task Force, and then we took the Senate membership structure, but we extended it through the House membership. So we kept the one member structure, but we added to that, being certain we had some balance between secondary and post-secondary interests and faculty and administrators, and we still left it open that the commissioner would be able to appoint four additional members to round out the balance, because obviously you never achieve perfect balance between all interests or advocacy groups on a task force, so we wanted to allow the commissioner some leeway there.
Yeah, me
So those would be the only changes I would highlight, and I'd answer any questions on the amendment. Oh, I did want to highlight one other. I don't know if this document was made available in the back or not, but the Department of Education, based on testimony from Jennifer Dugan last week, made a recommendation regarding the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery, which was in the House language and not the Senate language. And on the basis of that recommendation, we also have in this amendment, in a number of places, inserted the nationally recognized Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Test as an alternative in the transition options. So among the Compass, other diagnostics that are available, a student could choose this as a transitional option for graduation.
Thank you. We do have the memo to the conference committee from the department, May 13, 2013, about that test, and it reflected the testimony and from the conversation with the Department of Defense. So that's before us, and we have the A4. A lot of work with the department, and if the department would like to just offer any comments at this point, we're not going to formally act yet, but in the near future on this amendment. Commissioner Casalius, welcome.
Thank you, Senator Wieger and Chairman Marquardt and committee members. I really just first want to thank you so much for your very hard work this entire session, looking at all of these very complex issues of funding and also policy. I'm very appreciative to all of the chairs. I see Senator Torres Ray. I don't see Representative Mariani yet, but I'm very appreciative to everybody's work, and I think because of your very good work, we have a very nice target to reach for, and so I'm very appreciative of that. In terms of the assessment piece and the language and the amendment that's offered here, I want to just make a couple of points and still continuing to work on this language. The initial intent of the college readiness was to give an exam to students in 8th grade, 10th grade, and 11th grade. That was the same exam. And I'm fine with the Compass or some other type of diagnostic test given as interest for interested students to do a diagnostic. However, at the 11th grade, I'm still feeling as though that should be a required exam because it's the first time the full ACT or full college readiness exam would be given, since in 8th and 10th grade, it's partial. That would be partial questions for college readiness. So I just wanted to clarify that piece.
Thank you. Commissioner, questions? Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Commissioner, as you know, we've been working on this long and hard and have had a very a broad-based group of advisors, assessment experts, and directors throughout various school districts in our state. And I think one of the reasons we left this language open-ended after our last conversation was that there wasn't complete agreement among that group about the sequencing of the exams and whether if all students do indeed take that anchor assessment in 11th grade, where the diagnostic would be used and whether it would be used early enough to provide the appropriate tool. And because the language as it is had been available publicly for quite some time and we didn't get that feedback until later in the conversation, we just decided that to leave it open-ended and have that conversation perhaps in this summer in the interim, I was reluctant to make the change to the requirement in 11th grade without more consensus among the assessment advisors we had at the table.
Mr. Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner. And maybe this could go to the authors, too. I'm just looking on the thicker one of the working documents, and on there, if you go to the bottom of page 4, there was language here that related to career and technical programs. Clause D actually is the clause, and that's deleted, and I know how much time we spent, 2 years ago on that, and either Kevin or Representative Reinert, what actually happened to that? And this is where the issue surrounds where you have a technical program, and that program fulfills a very maybe not totally specific to a science, but is quite relevant and highly regarded, and I'm just wondering what was the rationale for the deletion of that language.
Yes, Representative Bryant, or the commissioner or staff, to address the provision that's deleted.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dahl.
Senator Stump, I believe we're just kind of finding it. We didn't eliminate that. I believe that it's just worked elsewhere into the bill, so just a matter of finding that, but it wasn't our intention to delete that particular part. We've just kind of reorganized, retooled, and moved it, I think, to the bottom of page 6 on 12.35 is where you're going to find that, I believe.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Dahl. My blood pressure is going down.
That's a good thing. Okay. Further questions, comments on the proposed amendment, which we'll entertain in a subsequent meeting? Commissioner.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Reiner, one of the other things that came back from the working group when we were really looking at the language was the timing of the exams and that they would be given in the spring. And I would be very supportive of the more diagnostic tests happening after 10th grade, given also our vocational requirement for or opportunity for students to take some vocational training for PSEO now in the 10th grade with that legislative change that was made last year. And with the 11th grade test, having that given in the spring, it's still very late. And so if the students weren't taking those state-issued tests, they'd be taking them very late to be able to do any later diagnostic if it's given in the spring. That's why I am urging that it be taken in 11th grade rather than the 12th grade.
And Commissioner, when might we expect a revised fiscal note then on this part for testing and assessments?
So, Senator, we would have just one administration required and optional then in the 12th grade after they've taken it as a junior.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, if Mr. I could just Court. Say, I'm sorry, were you asking on this, on the working proposal, you would like us to come up with a revised cost estimate?
Yes, as we prepare our final.
Yes, we'll be able to get that to you quite quickly, I think.
If you'd have to give it to
Great. Very good. Thank you. Further comments, questions? Representative Brainerd?
So thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know that we can resolve this in this conversation, but I do appreciate what you're recommending, Commissioner, and I understand the basis for that recommendation. I think where some of the tension lies is exactly how and where we can place the diagnostic. If the 10th grade exam is occurring in the spring of 10th grade, then the information for the use of that diagnostic wouldn't be available until early 11th grade, unless we find, that's the conversation to be had, is how that 10th grade test positions us to use the diagnostic and where we would place it. And in the language as currently written, we don't really say when the test will be administered. So that's not specified. So, again, I think we might need a working group to detail that. But if you see some language changes that we could make more consistent with that vision that don't underestimate the issue around the placement of the diagnostic, I'm totally open to that.
Thank you, Representative Reiner. I think we can continue to work on that.
Thank you. Next, the teacher licensure exam. We've had a great deal of discussion, and work has continued over the weekend on that, and we have a proposed amendment. I'll again turn to Senator Dahl, and I believe the amendment will be distributed and hopefully posted soon.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Yes, I think the A-44 amendment is coming around, and I'll try to do the best I can from memory in telling you what we're doing here. Maybe Representative Morgan can jump in or staff, but give you another second here to get that out.
Okay, Senator Dahl on the A-44 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and those of you that are following along, we're in Article 3. And I think the initial language starts on page 8, R8. Just in a very broad terms, you'll see like one of the first things on the amendment, we're deleting the word college level, and we're deleting words like basic skills, because we know actually that the MTLE, the Minnesota Teacher Licensure Exam, is... there are some college level questions in terms of trigonometry and pre-calculus and algebra, and it's hardly basic either. So we kind of got rid of language that would assume either basic skills or using the words college level, because we don't want them to take necessarily college math, especially if you're an elementary teacher trying to, you know, work through your testing requirements, content, and other areas. So that's some language that has been inserted throughout this amendment. Also, you'll notice on the amendment, we actually, in the House and Senate language, we both sides had three waivers or three tests. In the Senate version, you had one test getting us to the task force and then two additional waivers. The House language just talked about the three tests or three waivers throughout their bill. We've actually changed that to two to give a little bit more urgency to the task force and making sure that we do get this right and that we implement something fairly quickly from the task force that will address the issues that we've been debating for the last few months. So throughout the bill, then, there are really only going to be two exceptions or two waivers. And then you can see in line 1-7 of the amendment, the rules must be revised by the Board of Teaching no later than, there's a date, based on the recommendations of the Teacher Licensure Advisory Task Force. I think there are also some deletions, and I'm moving to page 11. I believe that we've taken the House language, but we've deleted the line 64.6 through 64.9, and also on the Senate side, that language from 1927, 1932 is no longer there. And it's, we felt that that was a little cumbersome on in terms of the school districts. So other than that, maybe Representative Morgan wants to add anything and in terms of my general comments about what we're trying to accomplish.
Thank you, Senator Dahl. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Dahl. The general sense and testimony that we heard was that the current teacher licensure exam is not working very well. And so our goal, as Senator Dahl expressed, was to give the task force the time to work on working with the Board of Teaching to establish some guidelines to make sure that the test is actually testing teachers' ability to teach, to go into the classroom and make a difference in students' lives. And we have some concerns now that it is not, that it is there is an artificial barrier to good teachers, otherwise highly qualified teachers, getting into the classroom. And we've seen some specific examples of concerns about that. but we don't want to do too much. We want to leave the task force. We want to give the task force a direction, but we want to put some time constraints on them coming back. We want to make sure that next year, at this time, we have, if not having acted on the recommendations, there is a great deal of interest in acting on those recommendations to make sure that we do have high standards that actually work for teachers, that actually work for the classroom, that actually help teachers, help students create the world's best workforce. So I appreciate working with Senator Dahl and others, the department, on crafting some language here. I think we're pretty close to where we need to be.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Morgan. And Senator Dahl. And then I'm going to ask Ms. Balmers from the board to just enter a statement on the record regarding the proposal and anyone else that would like to as well. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one other comment, as we tried to put these two bills together, these two versions, we tried to bring some consistency. We know that some of the folks that are having difficulty taking the test are teachers, immersion teachers whose first language is not English, and Senator Bonhoff did have a bill that was kind of joined in our policy bill here, and we're just trying to be consistent, whether you're a new teacher with a learning disability or all the kinds of stories that we heard from a lot of teachers that are either just new to the education field or are currently under waivers. So you know, the appeals, there is no appeals process. We hope that maybe something that the task force would come up with that was language that was in for those folks that instruct in other languages other than English. So we just try to bring some consistency for everyone, and that's true of the process and the number of exams and so forth.
Thank you. Ms. Balmers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the conference committee. I'm Karen Balmer with the Minnesota Board of Teaching. As I'm digesting this, and I believe I'm understanding the intent of what's provided here, I believe that it would line up with what the Board of Teaching has been advocating for this session in terms of both some short-term relief for candidates and teachers who are in the field right now and struggling, and that's, I believe, what is provided in the House language on page 61 and in other places of 2 additional years. That was a priority for the Board of Teaching to make sure that we had some relief for those teachers currently in the field, and you heard from some of those teachers this session. Similarly, the task force, I believe that the Board of Teaching has, and even prior to this session, was interested in some of these longer term. We have already put some of those ideas on the table. We certainly want to continue with that work, and so believe that the task force would be the mechanism, certainly to help us get there. So, again, as I'm digesting, I believe I understand the intent of this. I think that it does align with what the Board of Teaching has discussed and what they would support.
Thank you. Questions of Ms. Balmer? Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Balmer, on the cost of retakes of the licensing, what's the board's policy, and if someone has to do it two times or your first time plus two times, how big of a financial burden is that?
Ms. Palmer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, for the basic skills test, currently each subtest has a cost of $25 associated with it. There is an annual registration fee that is outside of that, but for instance, if they take a test and subtest and are not successful and need to attempt it again, it would be within that same year, it would be another cost of $25 to retake that subtest.
And Mr. Chairman, on time, is there a period of time that they have to wait between taking the test, or
Ms. Palmer?
Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, yes, there currently is a 45-day wait period between test administrations. They can register, and candidates do get an a preliminary passing status. It's not their official status, immediately at the close of their testing session, and then they subsequently, within 21 days, get their official score report and then may retake again if necessary in within the 45 days. One of the things that we are very pleased to move forward on is the remediation and the feedback, the diagnostic feedback to candidates, so that they actually will be able to better tailor the remediation efforts within that time frame, and we're very close to being able to provide that to candidates.
Thank you. Representative Verdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is a particular, you know, concern of mine. I have a, as you know, Ms. Palmer, a former constituent, actually, who was affected by this. And essentially, what is happening here is that we're giving him a stay of execution. And over the last couple of years in working with you, I've thought several times that a solution was being reached, and you know it really hasn't been. What we are now to is changing the school board authority that I was hopeful that we'd be able to give in this. So where I guess I am now is, you know, in the situation where we have to, you know, place my faith, or the faith of the legislature, in the Board of Teaching, that they will see the wisdom of trusting local school boards to employ who they want to in this. And, you know, originally when I proposed this the way that I did, with local school boards being able to extend, if they wish, for a teacher that they wanted to keep, I had thought that if the Board of Teaching eventually would come to see that wisdom, and I'm hopeful that they will.
Thank you, Representative Verdahl. Any additional testimony? Yes, Ms. Chris, please approach. And both these amendments are posted on the web now.
Good morning. Welcome. Mr. Chair, members. Cindy Crisp with the Minnesota Association of Colleges for Teacher Education. I just want to take a minute to thank you for all of the time and attention and energy you've put into this issue this year. You've heard from many of our students who have met every standard expected of them, and it's a lot of standards, except this basic skills test. And I think what you have here is going to go a long way to addressing those problems, correcting those problems. And Representative Verdahl, I would just say that, and I said this earlier to Representative Morgan, I think one of the most important things that I'm hopeful will come out of the task force work and then from the Board of Teaching is to provide an alternative to a test like the basic skills test for students who have problems taking tests. You've heard from teachers and candidates who have demonstrated in every other way that they have the skills and knowledge needed to teach, and they can't pass the test. So if we can provide an alternative way for them to demonstrate, not at a lower level of skills, not lower standards, but demonstrate that they know what we want them to know and be able to do to teach, then I think teachers like Dan Devine, from whom you've heard, and other candidates will be well served. So I think the answer is not just fixing the test, and I think that's what the task force will do. So just very grateful for all of your work. I'm sure there are hundreds and hundreds of teacher candidates and teachers across the state who, if you haven't heard from them yet, I hope will thank you once your work is done. This is such an important fix, and we're very grateful. We can tell that you listened to our students and our faculty and heard their concerns and responded. Thank you.
Thank you. Follow up, Representative Verdahl, followed by Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question, what happens if the legislature doesn't approve of the recommendations in this?
Ms. Chris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Verdahl, I don't know. I don't know if it will be back to the drawing board. But I feel very confident that the task force and the Board of Teaching will be able to craft a response to these issues and concerns that will satisfy the legislature and the governor.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Verdahl?
Thank you. Just let me say that in terms of what type of test then is finally authorized, dealing with pedagogy, I think that's important. But more specifically the content area that is being taught. You know, it's important that a math teacher know math, that an English teacher know English. I hope that that's the direction that's being looked at.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, as you're aware, this particular task only involves the basic skills test. And actually, I don't think you've heard testimony expressing concerns this session about either the pedagogy test or the content tests. Generally speaking, they seem to be working very well. There have been a few cases with the content tests. Ms. Baumer can correct me if I'm wrong. I believe that there have been some issues on a few of the tests with the correct cut score level. But we're only talking about this basic skills test. And candidates who've passed the content test, the pedagogy test, student teaching, all their course requirements that meet all of the state standards, and have just had one hurdle that they could not clear. And that was one portion of the basic skills test.
I understand that. Thank you.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Crisp, for your comments. I would call to the committee, the conference committee's attention, and also the attention of folks who might serve on this board. We do have alternative pathways to licensure in law right now, and the notion that we could also have alternative means of demonstrating quality teaching. Particularly as I think Representative Erdahl suggested, do we need a second grade teacher to be able to do math at the college level? I don't know that we do, but again, I'd like to leave that up to the task force. But determining some alternative paths or alternative means of demonstrating teaching excellence, I think, would be a good thing for the task force to consider. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I just quickly wanted to comment on an observation that Senator Erdahl made, and I think it's important for the committee members to keep this in mind. And this is born from experience because several years ago, I similarly was part of a process that was dependent on a recommendation from a task force and then to have legislative action. We had a task force work on a similar issue. This had to do with the math grad test. We then moved that provision through, as you recall, Mr. Chair, through both bodies of the legislature. And we got the...
Representative Mariani, I will always remember the meeting you and I had with Governor Pawlenty and Commissioner Segrin, laying the groundwork for that.
Right. all sides were struggling with that issue, is the observation there. Well, we got that proposal all the way up to the altar, and then the lights went out, and we didn't have a K-12 bill that year. So, Representative Erdahl, it does happen that, you know, you have great intentions and everyone's committed, but, you know, the dynamic of the legislative session doesn't guarantee that there will be action or timely action. And all that by way of saying that I think it's going to be really important for us to just have a solid, solid commitment going into the next legislative session that we will indeed act and send forward a proposal for the governor to sign. And one of the things that I'll be doing through our committee during the interim period is to, and I've spoken with Senator Torres Ray about this, is to set up some kind of a parallel process through working groups in our policy committees to either monitor what's happening with the task force, understand, you know, the logic, the framework, et cetera. And, of course, we'll have legislators on that task force as well. So, but anyway, well-laid plans can sometimes go awry, and so we just, Representative Erdahl, we just have to solidly be committed to making something happen next year.
Mr. Chair, can I just respond to that briefly?
Ms. Crisp, yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, I would just mention that last Friday the Board of Teaching, and it wasn't the first time they had done it, but their last two meetings, I was up here in hearings and couldn't hear it. But the Board of Teaching last Friday was working, grappling with some motions for action themselves. independent of all of this, if you will, to move ahead looking at some fixes that need to be made, considering what they need to be testing for and how to do it. And I believe that some of what you've asked to be considered are changes that the Board of Teaching could make without the legislature having to act on them. So I think there are, partly because of your good discussions, the Board of Teaching is already moving ahead to talk about how to fix some of the problems, and I think they have at least some of the authority they would need to do them. So I think it won't all depend on your good work.
Well, Mr. Chair, that's a good reminder of the importance for us as legislators to find ways to put pressure on our executive branch institutions, including the Board of Teaching. You said something that reminded me another comment I was going to make on Representative Erdahl's comment, and that is that, and I know the commissioner has expressed this in the past, that the safety valve kind of way to deal with this issue is to do a carve-out for particular licenses. And we have certainly seen those attempts on this legislative session. They're not evilly, if you will, intentioned. It's just natural that we would want to respond where you see the most sort of unjust kind of outcome happening. The Senate has certainly expressed a strong interest in doing something particularly focused on language immersion teacher candidates, and understanding, you know, what a small pool that is from which to pick from. I totally get the Senate's approach and appreciate what they're trying to do. But in the end, we're not going to resolve the major issue if we just sort of keep leaving out, you know, pressure to do these carve-outs for particular, licensure categories. We need to keep the pressure on to fix the entire system.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Mariani and I are thinking along like lines. You use the term safety valve. I was going to say that the school board provision that I'd had before should be a fail-safe option to help quality teachers who are already in the classroom. And, you know, maybe that can be considered that fail-safe or safety valve option remain. And then just real quickly, I also was called into Governor Pawlenty's office a few times to talk about education, and let me say it didn't always turn out real well for me.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. And we'll consider this in the near future if anyone else would like to share comments. Otherwise, thank you to everyone for their participation. Oh, Commissioner Casalias on the teacher licensure testing, and Ms. Hermans.
Thank you, Senator. I'll be brief. I just wanted to go on record and my very strong feelings about the MTLE and I know this is a very strong word, but the potential damage it's doing to our teacher workforce. And I do believe that we need to suspend it until we get it right. And I think that, you know, we've requested the Board of Teaching to do work on alternative certification on this before. It hasn't gotten done. I think the pressure has to be on there to get it done. We don't even have a definition for what a high-quality teacher is, but yet we have a teacher evaluation system, and we have a licensure system that tries to measure it. And I think that you have to subscribe to the fact that a standardized test score tells you whether a teacher is effective or not. And I personally don't subscribe to that one test score does, and especially when you use cut scores. When you have one cut score, you can be one question away from doing something you love and making a difference for children. And I think that we have to fix it now. I'm also concerned about the false positives you get. So you have teachers out there who are really good test takers, but maybe not as effective in the classroom. So I would really hope that you would take a strong position on the MTLE, that you would require this task force to come back, and that you would suspend it in the interim so that we don't have teachers being denied testing. I also would like to reiterate that teachers are required to take content tests. They are required to take pedagogy tests. They are required to do student teaching. They are required to pass all their coursework and standards in a teacher-licensed prep program by the Board of Teaching. And just as a reminder, I know that Representative Morgan brought up the alternative pathways, but just so everyone knows here, alternative pathway folks have to have the same exact requirements as our teachers. So I think that it's very, very important that we fix this now, suspend it, and let the task force do their work and bring back recommendations to this body.
Thank you, Commissioner. Ms. Hermanson, did you?
I'm just here to help answer questions about this. I think we kind of expressed that earlier, that
yes,
the suspension, let the task force do its job, and at that point, then the legislature would have the opportunity to act.
We have an article addressing charter schools. We've had previous discussion, the side-by-side comparisons, and Senator Torres-Ray and Representative Mariani have worked very diligently on this, and over the weekend I'll include. We're not ready for a formal amendment to be considered yet, very close. And I'd like to go to Senator Torres-Ray to give us an update, and we're going to invite some testimony on that. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. indeed, we have Article 4 is an article that had, it seemed to have just several provisions that were very short, but they were very technical, and so we had to do extensive review. And Mr. Chairman, if I may, what I would like to do is just name the probably four provisions that we are still working on, not because there is disagreement on those provisions, but because there is there are some technical issues associated with these provisions that we really need to incorporate into this language to make absolutely clear that the intent and the language that is prescribed here actually works mechanically. It works with existing provisions and the intent of the legislation. So, Mr. Chairman, the first section that I would like to review is on page R16A4. And that section has subdivision 14. It is a Senate provision. And this was language that was incorporated by one of our members to indicate that there is a need to provide an opportunity for compiling information about schools, and the language that you have in front of you actually said that the authorizer should compile the individual reports and make it available. It's not clear as to how does the authorizer make it available. So in this situation, each authorizer will have to create a vehicle, a website or an independent vehicle to put those reports out and to make them public. So what we heard from the department is that actually they are intending to move in this direction, and those reports will come to the department. They will be made available. So it will not be an individual. So now we have an individual report from school. The recommendation will be to create authorizers' reports, and then the department will have reports. So the public will be confused as to where to go. Do they go to the school? Do they go to the authorizer's website? Do they go to the department? So they want to resolve that, and they're very interested. Obviously, this is something that they really want to take care of. So that was one issue. And the other issue is that the legislation actually is prescribing kind of how these reports will operate. And I would like to ask the department to help us. They have been incredibly helpful and have been providing some guidance as to how we can capture the essence of this language and put it in a way that technically could be transparent and helpful to the public, so they actually get the reports, get the information they need. Because, members, what happens is that parents and teachers and everyone in the public, they just want to know how the school is doing. They don't know what authorizers and departments and how they work, and they don't know portfolios. They just know schools. So I think it's important that we are clear about what we are intending to do here.
Okay, we'll take testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, Darren Cordy from the Minnesota Department of Education. Obviously, as you can see, this was a Senate provision that was brought forward, and at the request of Senator Torres Ray and Representative Mariani, we have been kind of taking a look at this language and how it fits in with what we're already doing at the Department of Education in regards to authorizer oversight and increased transparency for the information for parents and students when it comes to learning about who the actual oversight body is for the charter schools that their students are attending. So I was going to turn over to our charter director, Cindy Murphy, who can elaborate a little bit on what we're already doing. And I think that there's definitely some work that we can do with this language to make sure that it applies, that it aligns with what we're doing, that it's not in conflict, and still captures kind of the intent of this language to make the authorizer system a little bit more transparent for the public.
Ms. Murphy.
Mr. Chair, committee members, we want to definitely be on record that we support authorizer accountability and transparency and appreciate the effort and the intent here to really bring public accountability to all of our work with charter schools and authorizers. We are in the midst of developing an authorizer performance evaluation system. And as Senator Torres Ray indicated, we want to make sure that as we establish our system for evaluating authorizer performance, that it's done in a very purposeful and intentional manner. And we believe that an authorizer annual report to the public is a very good idea, and we expect to be an essential component of our evaluation system. But what we're really looking to do is make sure that we get this right and do it well, and that we don't put the cart before the horse, but we allow our system development work to take place with our charter school stakeholders, resource organizations, and others, so that when we have this official annual public report, it's intentionally streamlined and very compatible with the work that we're doing with overall authorizer evaluation.
Questions? Okay, Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So what I am trying to do here is I understand, obviously, that, according to what we have heard, this language may not be necessary. However, I have asked, the staff and the department to really help us work on preserving the language to make sure that as we move forward, we are doing, what we need to do to keep the essence of this, what the author wanted to do with this, and then tie it to what the department is already doing. So we're working on the language still, and we're very close to, I understand that the staff and you are working on this and coming very close to make sure that we capture the essence of what is in here and tie it into what the department is already doing, because I think that is very close. Thank you. The next one, Mr. Chairman, is a provision that it's also a Senate provision that we're still working on the mechanics of it. I have several things that, and that's on page R26A4. And I know that members in the Senate, this was a House provision, and members in the Senate had some significant questions as to the responsibility of figuring out what is the liability for the state of Minnesota in a case that a charter school enters into terms to into borrowing money, and then what if the school closes, what do we do with the debt, and what are the consequences in financial terms for the schools. And I think Mr. Piccolo explained this very carefully, and I would like to ask him to come to help us understand that provision. I think that we through his testimony, we were able to understand what this is, and the staff continues to work on this language to make absolutely sure that those concerns are addressed.
Mr. Piccolo.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Eugene Piccolo, Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. On page R26-4, the proposal does two different things. First, it allows a charter school to get a letter of aid anticipation from the commissioner like traditional districts do. And the second part it does is that if the charter school is selling its assets, its anticipated aid, which is one way in which schools have had to do to get money through the shortfalls, especially with the holdback period, that they have to do it in a transparent manner by posting it so many days in advance so that people can see what is required, what is being done there. Because the sale of assets is normally at a much higher rate of expenditure than you can get at a bank. And so we want to make sure there's transparency in that. In the conversations with Senator Torres Ray, we have suggested putting in a provision to say that a certificate of aid from the commissioner does not create any liability on the part of the state. It doesn't to begin with, but if there's need for more language on that, we are very supportive of that.
Thank you. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Piccolo, we were we spent quite a bit of time talking through this language when we were conferring last week. But one thing I hadn't thought about at that time, and so I'd like you to kind of help us with this. So the issue here has to do with how do we get through shortfall periods. This legislature has made a strong commitment to get away from the shift that we did and get us back to the 90-10, which is the norm in terms of how we forward revenues appropriations to school districts. And we're actually pretty darn close toward doing it. We have the mechanism in statute that automatically, is buying down that shift. So what is the ongoing need for something like this, given the fact that we're moving back to that normative appropriations flow with charter schools?
Mr. Piccolo.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, I think, we applaud the work of the legislature to pay back the shift. That has been a high priority for us because our schools do get impacted much more than traditional districts because of the borrowing costs and so forth. In terms of this language, I think the key piece there in that case would be the second half of the amendment that requires the transparency of the sale of assets at any time, because if a school is borrowing money through the sale of assets, that needs to be required, because those sales are not, if they are done through a factory, they're called factoring companies, those organizations are not controlled by banking laws and so forth, so they can charge fees that are very high, and the public has no sense until after it's done what those fees are.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, so a couple of things. So one, and I do applaud the proposal for transparency here, but that you just said something that raises some other questions. But before I get to that, back to the first question, what is the ongoing need for charter schools to be able to borrow if we're back to a 90-10?
Representative Mariani. Excuse me. Mr. Piccolo.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mayor. For some school, there's always an ongoing need because of cash flow, because most of our schools are young in terms of their age, and some of them do not have a huge reserve, cash reserve. So there is some need by some schools for ongoing where they borrow money for cash flow purposes every year, especially during the summer months, because charter schools are on a different payment schedule than traditional districts in terms of the amount of payments they get.
So, Mr.
Representative Mariani.
So, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Priglo, we, as I said, we should have been talking about this when and we will continue to talk about it. But so I'm not trying to surprise you with questions that I didn't raise when we spoke earlier. But it seems to me that so let me jump over to the second part of what you had said, that it sounds like charter schools are being forced to, not choosing to, but being forced to go to lenders that are not sort of your typical lenders in this kind of situation. In other words, lenders that may not be controlled by banking laws, which kind of throws up a red flag for me, because then I think about high rates of interest, fees that you might not normally see, in a straight up, regular school district borrowing, from a community bank, for instance, and at the end, that suggests that we're not getting, and again, I'm not casting aspersions at charter schools, but that perhaps we're not getting the value, if you will, of public expenditures relative to whatever we're having to pay out the door. Now, one can argue, St. Paul Schools is borrowing from Wells Fargo. They're being charged an interest rate that's, public dollars that are going to, meet the bank's profit line relative to the interest rate. But it sounds like there's a bigger disparity here, and I think as legislators we need to be real mindful of any kind of scenario, whether it's regular public schools or charter schools, that are sending taxpayer dollars out in a way that's putting money in the pockets of bankers, if you will. So I know there was a question in there, and I started to have one.
Now, Representative, are you defending the House provision here?
Well, Mr. Chair, it is a House provision. I'm trying to actually ask, I think, some really good public policy questions here relative to, the flow of appropriations out to schools, some of which may be captured to lending agencies as schools attempt to meet those needs. So maybe the question here is there an alternative way for us to deal with this issue? Should we be looking at a different schedule, say, for disbursements of revenue to charter schools so that you don't wind up with the cash flow problems that you have even under the 90-10 framework?
Mr. Piccolo.
Senator Wieger, Representative Mariani. I think there's two pieces here. One is, in terms of the payment schedule, I think that might be something to look at down the line again. I think one of the things we're trying to do here is to, this practice is going on, and we're trying to bring transparency to it, that, and one of the reasons why charter schools pay a higher rate is because they do not have property tax as a guarantee for the loans. And so districts can get a better rate, if you want to say it that way, than charter schools, because they have property tax that they can use as a guarantee for the payment of their loan. In this case, it's the sale of anticipated aid that becomes an issue, in that they are not borrowing money, they are selling their anticipated aid, and those companies are not under any jurisdiction of banking laws or any usury laws or whatever. And so what we're trying to do simply is to make it transparent to the public and to parents and to everybody else what it is that schools are being charged for those fees.
Thank you. Any additional testimony on this provision? Okay, Senator Torres-Ray, any other provisions that you'd like to point out?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mariani, the same.
Finally, on my end, and Representative Mariani probably can help me with this as well. On page R23A4, we have a provision that is in subdivision, subdivision 23. So it's 49, it starts on 49.4, goes to 49.20 in the Senate side. There were significant questions about a provision that I work with the original author of this particular provision to incorporate language to really address an issue about what do we do with the students when we close a charter school. That has been actually my main concern about this provision, and the author work on a language to that you see on 49, 12, and 13 to ensure that the authorizer work with the board to provide options for the children of the schools and be aware of schools of choice. So what has been very difficult for this provision is to really look at how it gets implemented. We heard from the department that obviously the commissioner is responsible for that, and when a school closes and the board is no longer there, for how long do we work? You know, what is the time frame? How do we work with families and children? How do we put resources? Do we create a website? I mean, how the mechanics of really taking care of these children actually happen? Because this is a choice. Parents and students choose these schools, and so whose responsibility is to tell them where to go? And finally, there is a provision in the paragraph, in the final part of the paragraph, that states that the federal, the factors in receiving the authorized performance in subdivision three are under the federal measures. And so we also had significant questions relating to the requirement that is in this particular statute to ensure federal requirements. So I think there are significant issues that we're working on. I know that there is an amendment that we already put together, Mr. Chairman, but those are significant provisions that we continue to work on. And I think Representative Mariani may have a...
Okay, and I'll ask Representative Mariani if you'd like to comment any further on these provisions. And overall, we're very close. I think we expect within the next day or so to have a proposal for us to consider. But Representative Mariani, further comments.
Mr. Chair, there is a provision on, it's actually two parts, but the main part is on R24A4. And this has to do with a school district who's an authorizer that could also be a landlord to the, essentially be a landlord to the charter school, and so then, you know, be in line to receive the lease aid. And I know that that's generated quite a bit of discussion among different groups, and we can certainly, you know, wait till tomorrow to have those individuals come and speak, or if they want to speak now. I just think, you know, do you want to do it now?
Sure.
I think it'd be good for the conference committee to hear the different, to hear the why the proponents think it's an important issue, and then to fully consider why those who are opposed to it are opposed to it. And so I think we have the Minneapolis School District in particular that has something like this in play, and I think the department might want to have something to say about this as well.
Thank you. Representative Mariani is the Minneapolis District represented, Jim Grathwell, and if the department would like to join him for a point counterpoint, perhaps. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members, Jim Grathwell, Minneapolis Public Schools. This provision is fundamentally, do you want to punish a charter school that chooses to collaborate and work with an authorizing school district and lease property from them? We believe that simple. the department approves the charter, approves the lease, approves the authorizer, and if they need any other authority to approve anything, we'd be happy to offer that up.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Grathwell. Questions of Mr. Grathwell? Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that I have done extensive presentation in committee in the Senate, but I haven't had the opportunity, of course, to speak to members in the House. But this provision is very important to Minneapolis School District members, and the reason I have been a strong proponent of it, and I'm willing to entertain, you know, any kind of additional language. I know that Education Minnesota wanted to add some comfort language to make sure that, you know, this, the district is not intending to move in a direction to really co-opt charter schools that are coming, you know, to the district and are really thinking about opening the doors in Minneapolis, and I'm very open to that. I don't think that is the intent. So one issue that is important, Mr. Chairman and members, that you know, is that we have a significant number of parents and teachers and students and community members who are interested in coming together and offering solutions for the significant problems we have with the achievement gap. We have buildings. We have resources that we want to make available to these parents, to these children, so that we can work in collaboration to deal with these challenges. This issue has been a very political issue in my district, and we're finally coming together, working together to offer these solutions to district. District, we have a number of wonderful charter schools that we work in partnership with, and we want to cultivate that. So the intent here is really to continue to work in partnership, and I'm open to work with anyone who wishes to help us really keep this in place and move forward with the intent that I brought to the Senate in the first place.
Ms. Hermans.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Rose Hermanson, Department of Education. I think I testified in both bodies on this as to our concern. And I think Representative Mariani laid it out. Our concern is not that schools or school districts rent to charters. Our concern has been when that school district is also the authorizer of that charter. The concern as expressed is the responsibility for oversight of the authorizer and being able to make that determination in a fair and impartial manner. We have several public entities that are authorizers. We have several school districts that are authorizers. And being able to make a judgment call as to whether they are making their determination about the performance of the school is independent of other considerations has been our concern as it relates to this issue. I used the example before of Rushford Peterson, who had facility needs, had come to the legislature, had asked for bonding authority. They are an approved authorizer, and so how do we make the determination if they would then close a school and authorize it? What are the determining factors around that? We have colleges that are authorizers, and the commissioner just whispered in my ear. She said, "Our concern here is double dipping." And the fact that we pay for schools once, do we then pay lease aid again? In the case of Minneapolis, as I pointed out earlier, we got alternative facilities funding that also comes into play here. So it gets a little more complex. We support the collaboration. We would support Minneapolis if they had another authorizer want to rent their buildings. That's really not the issue. There may be some middle ground here if there's some way of, you know, most charter schools pay the heat and the light and all that stuff out of their operational budget. If there's maintenance costs, maybe there's some way of adjusting a modified rate, but I do think that we still have the fundamental concern is how do we judge whether the decisions made by that authorizer are being made on the performance of the school as opposed to other considerations. So we may be able to have continued discussions, but it is kind of a dicey one in relationship to the use of public dollars.
Mr. Grathwell, is this dicey, double-dipping?
Mr. Chair, members, and Rose is a very good friend, and as well as the commissioner. current law gives districts capital authority and operating capital to reflect that we build capital authority and operating capital to reflect that we build schools with bricks and mortar and we receive revenue as part of our general ed formula to support the operation and maintenance of those schools. That's not double dipping, it's how things work. Schools are built with, you know, our long-term assets, and we build, use the capital authority for that. We're terminating the lease of the charter that we authorize to because of non-payment of their lease. I don't think there is a problem because they were not given the charter that we that was approved by the department, the lease that was approved by the department, and the authorizer that was approved by the department, and we had received lease aid for. There was a new interpretation of that current law statute. I think what we want you to do is go back and reflect your adoption of legislation last year that we proposed on this collaborative charter school model, where you actually stated your intent as a legislature to have charter schools and regular school districts work together. We both bring assets to the table. This is one way that we've been able to work in Minneapolis. I think it's a successful model. As long as I've been working in for the Minneapolis schools, which is 15 years now, I've heard this legislature and previous legislatures say, we really want to see school districts and charter schools collaborate. This helps us do that. It's the intent you adopted last year. We'd like to see it fulfill that intent.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Grapple, could Minneapolis Public Schools, as an authorizer, guarantee a loan that a charter has to take out because of the shift problem?
Mr. Grapple.
Mr. Chair and Senator Johnson, I think that's a possibility that we could work with charters, and that's part of the discussion we had when we enacted that collaborative language last year, that facilities, shelter from an education aid's payment shift, these are things that a school district can put at the disposal of a charter that choose to enter into this sort of agreement with the district.
And
Chair Johnson.
Chair, it seems to me that the charter schools are moving toward becoming a public school with the funding and with the support. Would you see it that way?
Mr. Grapple, they're Chair, technically Senator they're Johnson. Public schools.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, charter schools are public schools with right. funded by public resources. They have this proposal that you discussed a little bit earlier was the aid anticipation note authority, which you know is an instrument of public debt that you would be confer upon them. So, I mean, charter schools have different powers and authorities than regular school districts.
Correct.
I think the public policy issue is, do you want us to work together and collaborate for the interests of all students? And if so, what public policy infrastructure supports that? I believe the provision that's in the Senate bill supports that collaboration. I just want to close by saying the fiscal interest of a school district would be to crush every charter school and try and recruit their enrollment back into the school district, right? That's the raw fiscal interest. What we're trying to do is work with partners within the city of Minneapolis that are doing a good job serving our students. And understand, we have students moving back and forth between charter and regular schools. So our goal here is to serve Minneapolis public school students, whether they're no matter where they are schooling. And I just want people to understand, when we talk about conflict of interest, I could argue forcefully that working closely with the charter sector is not in the fiscal interest of the Minneapolis public schools, but it's in the best interest of all students. That's why we do it.
Thank you. Ms. Hermanson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would... Two points here. Number one, we went from sponsors to authorizers in 2009. That's not that long ago. The department had to go through a process of approving authorizers after you passed that legislation. And there were schools out there that we then had to transfer all over the state from sponsors to approved authorizers. So it took some time in that transition to make these changes, and there were school districts that were sponsoring schools that probably got lease aid during that period of time. what we've done in the interim is trying to bring this all into some consistent format that we would not have a conflict or related party authorizing, because we had not talking about school districts specifically, but we had some problems with related parties leasing to themselves. And so we're trying to clean this up so there is not this conflict. In relation to the collaboration, we fully support that. That I don't think that really is the issue. I get a little nervous when Mr. Grathwell indicates that the Minneapolis Public Schools would take on the debt of that charter as authorizers. I'm not sure how we would do that under what legislative authority, but that would make me very nervous in how we finance things and who's responsible for what. So I guess I'd have to have a further conversation with him about why he makes that comment. We've got many. Winona was the first case that came to our attention on this. Winona is an authorizer. They had a school that wanted to transfer them to the sponsorship process. We said no because they would also be the authorizer and rent the school. We then worked with that school to get another authorizer. They're renting or leasing from the Winona Public Schools, but Winona is not their authorizer. Again, I think what we may, if we look at this a little more, is there some capital expenses that we can, if they do rent from the school district, maybe there's some way of dealing with this. But right now, I think we'd have to have a little further discussion on that.
And that will be the final word at this point. We'll continue that discussion.
Thank you,
Mr. Grathwell. Ms. Hermanson. Following up on integration and achievement, we've had the preliminary side-by-side review, extensive testimonies. Actually, we had a joint presentation to our respective committees earlier. We have nearly reached an agreement. I again want to thank the policy chairs, Senator Torres Ray, Representative Mariani, for their leadership in this area. And we'll go to Representative Mariani for an update, and we're perhaps looking at draft language later today or tomorrow. Representative Mariani, and we'll go to Senator Torres Ray first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just on the previous, my apologies, the staff did prepare an amendment for the charter schools for Article 4. So if, I think we should distribute it because it helps you kind of get the conversation going. This is not final, but it has a lot of what we talked about, and we still work on those provisions that we heard testimony about. So I just wanted to make sure that we distribute that.
Okay, non-agreement for consideration, and so we'll share that. Thank you, Senator Torres Ray. Representative Mariani on Integration Achievement Program.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a brief word again on the charter provision before I do this. There's also a provision on R13 that includes the charters in on the House's World's Best Workforce Accountability framework system. Obviously, that will be, and there are, little provisions here and there that are going to fall in the same category, that those are going to be subject to the other discussion about where the House and the Senate line up on finances and how, what kind of accountability systems will be attached to those. So look for that language as well, possibly to emerge from the charter school provision. Excuse me. On the integration piece, we actually are very close. And just as a quick run through and a reminder for the committee members, what we've done, both the House and the Senate, and I want to tip my hat to my counterpart in the Senate, Senator Torres Ray, for working through this issue simultaneously as the House has worked through it throughout the session. This is pretty complex stuff, and I think if we were waiting until both houses were to meet at the end of the year to be able to come up with a powerful new frame, we might not be able to pull it off. And so I thought we both thought it was very important for us to continually inform one another throughout the legislative session. And I think what you have before us is a good piece of work that reflects that level of collaboration between the House and the Senate. The big context here, of course, is the two interlocking purposes that we create for the integration revenue, the racial economic integration revenue program, where we add academic achievement expectations and accountability to racial integration expectations and accountability in this program and in the revenue application. And of course, you know, what we're being driven by is an expectation that our schools should be producing students who possess new global era level skills. Skills that are as much about academic or as much about being able to work in a racially, culturally diverse and complex and interconnected world, as well as being highly proficient in academic content. And so the language that we have in both bodies reflect that approach and that shift in terms of what we expect out of this program and how we're going to hold it accountable. Currently, we're working off of the Senate's language on the accountability measures, and what we've got tentatively agreed to is that the data that we identify for use in an accountability framework will be required. Districts will be required to demonstrate outcomes in both of those areas, academic achievement and racial integration. And we're looking at the math and reading growth measures in regards to the academic accountability part of that. We're working to align that with the emerging new assessment, student assessment system that's that will be in place for secondary schools, and then being very deliberate about identifying those K through 6 assessment systems. And of course, currently the state uses the MCA's assessments, and those will continue to be part of our student testing system in those grades. And then on the integration side, as a required demonstration of effectiveness, we're struggling a little bit here still yet, but we're looking at adding the at using the world language certificates and also the student engagement requirements. Both of those exist in our state statutes. I'm still struggling a little bit with whether or not we might need language that actually measures concretely whether schools are in fact racially integrated. And then as part of that accountability system, districts will have additional options. And so currently we have in language rigorous coursework, a demonstration of outcomes relative to rigorous coursework or post-secondary preparedness. We're still working on the distribution of the revenue part of the program. Both House and Senate have a grandfather clause, if you will. We're at different metrics on that. That'll be partly dictated by what happens at the end when we get to our finance agreements, so that we could adjust accordingly to make sure that we don't create big winners or losers relative to districts that are participating in the integration program as the House and the Senate arrives at an agreement about the general ed appropriations. But both houses have that provision. Both houses also have a per pupil formula piece connected to the distribution. And then where we still need to do some work is the Senate has a index that comes out of the MMR system to be used as part of the distribution system, and obviously they're looking at academic outcomes as a way to award, if you will, appropriations. The House is friendly to that idea. What gives us heartburn is enshrining the MMR system into statute, if you will, into our approaches, because the MMR system is based on a waiver from the federal government. And so the department has actually come up with some ideas relative to state statutes for accomplishing the same thing, which is, you know, using a part of that distribution based on academic achievement. And so we're looking at that. And I think other than that, that's it. I mean, I think we're awfully close, and like some other commissions, some of these would be dependent on what they
It's not a timer.
Wow.
Okay.
So I think we're awfully close to getting language to come forward here.
Excellent. Would Commissioner Casellas or designee like to address this on the update as we're looking at guidance as we close this part? Ms. Hermans.
I'm sorry. I think it's from outside.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Rose Hermans, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Ed. We've had some meetings. I think, you know, we've shared the governor's language. I think our focus is very similar. We worked also off of the task force report. We have a little different manner in which we get there. I think and I kind of smile because it parallels the world's greatest workforce language almost, where we have districts set goals, they align their budget to them, they then tell us how they're going to measure them in valid and reliable measures, and then how are they going to evaluate it. A couple of the keys, and I think the uses are very similar, and we've talked a little bit about using not incorporating necessarily the MMR or focus rating, but the provisions of that somehow in the statute as we try to design it. I think our goals are very similar. We want something that's workable, number one. Number two, we want districts to have time to show us that they're getting results. So we have to think a little bit about timelines here. And then we want some accountability if they're not getting those results. We've shared some of the commissioner's thoughts on that about withholding some dollars and working with districts to get to these goals, and then taking a long, more of a long-term look at how we get there. So I think it looks. We've had some good discussions, and I'm hopeful we can get to some good language as we develop them.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I did neglect to say, so the work that we've done so far has really been about the House and the Senate, you know, lining up their language. The next step, among other steps, is to, we've asked the department to come in with their framework and see if we can marry those languages. And so we hope that we can do that in the next day or two. The withhold provision as well is also important. That's a part that kind of mirrors the world's best workforce piece, and I think where Senator Torres Ray and I are moving toward is a framework where you'll have an evaluation that may then trigger an improvement plan that will be developed along with the department, and then the district will have some time to work on that improvement plan. And at that point, both of us are pretty comfortable with a pretty tough and strict withhold at that point. When you play it out over the years, you're looking at 5 years, I think when we looked at the timeline. And it seemed to us pretty commonsensical that, and again, we're talking about goals that districts themselves have identified, that seems to be a long period of time for a district to be able to either accomplish their goals or perhaps an indication that they're not doing what's necessary to meet those goals. And so at that point, we're feeling much more comfortable about a pretty strict withhold.
Commissioner Casellas.
Senator and Representative Mariani, I just felt compelled to come up and speak just briefly about the set aside and the withhold. And I know we've talked about it, and I agree with you. At some point, there could be a strong withhold and a strong accountability, but I do think it needs to be a set-aside and working collaboration. We don't want to return to a punitive system like NCLB was. And so initially, you know, our thoughts are a set-aside, and then as they don't make their goals, then there might be some sort of withholding. But at first, I think we ought to work with districts collaboratively because it supports our statewide system support and our regional centers. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, I kind of interchanged the two there. Clearly that's the intent. One last point. As we develop this new language, we do have a rule. And I think down the road, we're going to have to see how this rule that probably needs revision will work with our what we come up with in statute, because that rule's been in place for over 10 years now. And so maybe we may ask for some language to have us look at that in the interim, bring back some recommendations on changes there as well. So.
And I did forget that provision or that language that popped up in our last conversation. I think that's a very appropriate thing to do. We actually had some attempts during the legislative session to, in fact, we had an amendment, I think, that was offered in your committee, Mr. Chair, to just embed the rule completely into statute. When we looked at it, we realized, there's a lot of work that needs to happen there before we can take that step. And so both House and Senate in our last conversation with the department on this see some real wisdom in terms of having the commissioner come back with some strong recommendations on how we can change the rule. I know that Senator Torres-Rae is also very interested, and apparently the Senate is as well, very interested in having as many school districts as possible participate in this program. And so one of the things we may be looking for as the commissioner looks at the rule might be ways in which that's possible. Currently, the gateway into the program is through the rule, and we don't want to create two or three different gateways into the revenue program. I think there's wisdom in having the language in the rule, guide participation. But I look forward, in the future in ways in which we can modernize that rule.
Thank you.
Thank you, members, and we'll look forward to your next report and language for us to consider. Also on the agenda for our first part of today, we have several task force work groups. Excellent ideas that have often these groups have provided reform measures that we're considering right now in our omnibus bills. And we have language for a Career Pathways Advisory Task Force in the Senate, similar, but a Career Pathways and Technical Advisory Task Force in the House. There's a Career and Technical Advisory Task Force in the Senate. Teacher Licensure Advisory Task Force in both the Senate and House. A Standard Adult High School Diploma Advisory Task Force in each body. Substantially the same in language, but there's some things that need to be worked out. Also, the Senate proposes a school facilities finance work group, and the House has the Minnesota Youth Council Committee. All of these great ideas, and talking to Representative Markert, we were going to ask Representative Morgan and Senator Johnson to further review the language with the department, because the department would be very active in staffing this, the expectation and workload, the financial impact, and to further review some of those important aspects. So Representative Morgan and Senator Johnson, they've agreed to do that, and we'll get an update from them at a very near future on that. Representative Brenner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, if Senator Johnson and Representative Morgan have further input, we're glad to have that. But Senator Dahl and I did work with the department on the Career Pathways and Technical Education Advisory Task Force language in the House and the two task forces in the Senate, and came to a compromise that took the House language over the structure and the Senate language over the membership. And that's part of our amendment in that A4 amendment that I presented today. So if we could at least have that in the mix of the discussion, I'd appreciate it.
Yes, and thank you for pointing that out. That'll be a part of, you know, the mix, and but as we put together a whole package, we thought it would be helpful to have some consistency in how we approach the task force and work groups. We have accomplished quite a bit so far, but now that we have targets, we will look into additional money in terms of what the Senate had been looking at, and from the House there will, you know, be some challenges, but still a great deal of opportunity as we you know, put number to program. And again, I'm very excited about the possibility for a win-win in the very near future. We will recess soon, and obviously there's a lot of discussion to be done with tax chairs and other aspects of the proposals before us, but look forward to that, and we'll keep you fully posted when we're ready to have our next meeting, but we'll be in recess. Representative Marker.
Well, thank you very much, Senator Wieger, and today, as you mentioned, we did a lot of heavy lifting on a lot of policy things, and I again want to say thank you to our policy chair, Senator Torres Ray, and Representative Mariani, and Representative Brainerd, and Senator Dahl, for all of this work, and the fact, like Representative Mariani said, that you've been working kind of together as the session went on brings us to this point, because this is a lot of really, really important stuff, and when you look at gain of the world's best workforce, this assessment and all these other things play a huge role and probably will be the key to all of that. So look forward to talking budget along the way, and thank you so much, Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Representative Marker. Members, we are in recess.